It is, I don't know if it's Engineering Week or Engineering Month. For us, it's going to be Engineering Month. We officially declare it, in fact, Engineering Month. We spend a lot of time in Tasmania celebrating builders. We certainly spend all too much time celebrating architects. We'll probably have an Architects Month some point soon. But this month, it's about the people who actually make sure that things are going to stand up. It's all well and good to have the idea. But let's talk about the people who then get out the protractor and do the calculations and make sure that something that is built will stay built. It's Engineers Month. And what we want to do on mornings is come up with the definitive list of the 10 engineering wonders of Tasmania. So I need you to pop your thinking hat on. Could it be as simple as a convict-built bridge? Could it be some of the stuff that is enormous in scale? What about a dam or two? And, of course, the copper arteries that flow from that and have facilitated the industrialisation of this state. What about something tiny, like that little widget that was created by Aurora and that checks in on your house's electricity system? They've been invented here and exported to the world. That's engineering. We're going to talk about engineering all this month on the program, and we'd love you to make your suggestions. We'll start this morning with something made of concrete and reinforced steel, and then, of course, copper and hydroelectric turbines running power out and across the state. Let's talk about how that sort of engineering has changed Tasmania. And to do that, we're going to need an engineer in the studio. We've got one, as it happens. David Poynting is the Education Manager for Engineers Australia. David Poynting, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Leon. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for coming in. Look, already people are starting to make their suggestions. Dave on King Island, how about the Cape Wickham Lighthouse, made from granite quarried on King Island, the tallest in the Southern Hemisphere and a beauty to look at too. That's not a bad starting suggestion.
Not at all. For me, it's something that engineers are quite involved in, of providing ways of keeping us safe while at the same time ways to get goods and services around on ships.
The Abbed Railway has also been given a nomination from Jane this morning. Thank you very much for that, Jane. The Abbed Railway, I think one of very few in the world that works with that sort of teeth gearing system.
Yeah, the funicular for steep terrain and narrow gauge and built at a time of low cost and low resources. But yeah, to enable an industry that transformed part of the state.
And Chris says, the Tasman Bridge must be up there. And indeed, that's the picture that we've used. Up on the website. So look for that picture if you're going to nominate your engineering wonder. But of course, it's interesting to follow sort of how the Tasman Bridge and its evolution, or perhaps its predecessor, the reasons it came to be, stimulated engineering as well.
The reasons that the bridge came to be, I suppose it was just that we have a body of water dividing the middle of our state or the southern part of our state, and it's a body of water that's actually larger than the bridge that Sydney Harbour Bridge has crossed, but it's also quite deep. So there are a number of attempts to bridge the Derwent River, and there was a floating bridge that didn't survive very long due to storms, and then we had the Tasman Bridge built, I think, 60, 70 years ago.
And one of the things we might touch on is sort of the zinc works, and one way or another, the engineering that led to the zinc works and then the industry that came from the zinc works knocked down the bridge, and then the Eastern Shore in Hobart somehow flows from that.
Yeah, so I suppose if we go back, we'll start, as you said, it's about concrete and copper, and we'll talk about the power systems that were stimulated and enabled the zinc works to be created. But as we know, it's a large industrial plant up the river from the bridge, and we know that in 75 it got struck by a boat called the Illawarra, and even though it was designed to have a glancing blow by a ship, it wasn't designed, or it's pretty much impossible to design a bridge that can handle a heavy loaded ore carrier crashing into it. So the bridge was knocked down, as we know, and 11 people died. But we also know that it stimulated the development of the Eastern Shore. That used to be a sleeper sort of area, didn't have a lot of shops and infrastructure because you could just pop across the river. But that loss of the bridge stimulated the growth of Bellarive and Lindisfarne and those areas.
Indeed, you're welcome to nominate your suggestions for Engineering Wonders of Tasmania this morning. My guest is David Poynting from Engineers Australia. He's the Education Manager there, and it's Engineers Month. Well, it is on mornings, particularly this month. One, two, three four suggestions. The Batman Bridge, right? We'll keep putting our list together as the month continues. In fact, let's quickly say hello to Eric before we get into the particular bit of engineering that we want to talk about this morning. Eric's in Marion Bay. Eric, good morning.
Good morning.
What are you putting on the list?
A sodium mod. He's head of the hydro, and he's head of the bridge, and also all the hydro dams.
All the hydro dams, Eric?
Yes, I worked there from very early 60s to the late 70s. And were all the streams on transport through all the streams, and engineered those and know that bridge.
Yep. Eric, we might start. In fact, that's where we're going to start this morning, on the hydro dams, because, well, you know, I think if you ask people around Australia what the big engineering wonders of Tasmania were, they would probably suggest that the hydro dams. So, David, if we're to come up with, I know they were little dams, but we want something big, we want something significant, where would you start us in listing the first sort of big engineering hydro wonder of Tasmania?
So Leon and I talked about this a bit before. It's a difficult one to call, in that Tasmania should be very proud that it was years away, or years after the start of basically electrification of cities around the world. So an example would be that the first electric motor was developed in 1871, and it was first coupled with a hydro power system in 1878. And the first hydroelectric plant was built in the UK. And only 3 years later, Tasmania had one. So after the very first in the world,
yep,
3 years later, we had a hydroelectric system. And that was at the Mount Bischoff tin mine on the west coast.
Wow.
So that was a small-scale system, but it was a very, you know, it was one of the first in the world. So that's a pretty significant achievement. But it was a small system.
But so that's a sort of 1881.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then how long did it take for sort of the ramping up in terms of scale to take place that saw Tasmania thinking about large-scale hydro? Yeah.
So some of the challenges of creating electricity was, first, we needed things that could create electricity. So we know that we can, you know, you and I could get on electric bikes and create a spinning wheel. But to turn that into electricity, you need a dynamo or something to generate. So they were invented in 1880, kind of. We then need to be able to use that electricity. So we need electric motors or electric lights. And they were also invented in 1880-something. So around the 1880-1900s was when electricity systems first started to be developed. The difference between that and our modern systems is the ability to transmit that power from where you're producing it to where you want to use it. That didn't start to be developed until early 1900, 1905. So there's an argument that the modern systems that we have now, that began with what's the Wattamana power system in the Great Lake in the centre of Tasmania, they could not have been done any earlier than they were done. So the achievement there is that not only were they some of the first in the world, they were also done almost as early as possible.
So it wasn't just visionary in terms of scale. It was visionary in terms of the early adoption, or the really early adoption of the technology that existed in the world. Righto, so what is in the Wattamana Dam? I mean, to describe to us what went into making the dam. For those that haven't seen it before, what are we talking about?
So the Wattamana Dam is built on the Great Lake in the middle of Tasmania. So it was a pre-existing lake. And I suppose to have a hydroelectric dam, you need a couple of things. One is you need a source of water that will be flowing at a high pressure and speed, and that then turns a turbine. So if you imagine a water wheel with buckets around the outside of the wheel, you want water at a high speed to be hitting that to spin the wheel. To get that high speed, you basically need a height difference. So you need a dam that's higher than where your bucket is. So for Wattamana, it's a 300-metre height difference. So that means that you often have a dam separate to where the power station would be. So for the Wattamana system, we had Great Lake as a reservoir that already existed, and then somewhere lower than that, 300 metres lower, they built the power system, and they had to get the water from the lake down to that. And that included things like a canal and then some pipelines, which were made out of wood or steel to basically get water to flow at high speed to spin some buckets on a wheel.
I've heard these stories of the wooden pipeline. So they're real. They made this pipeline out of huge wooden sections.
Out of wood staves, so it's a bit like, I'm not a wooden pipeline expert, but it's pretty much like building a wooden barrel, so thin staves of wood surrounded by steel bands that keep the pressure in. So I think the pipeline originally built was made out of hardwood and then steel in different sections, but this was also built during the Great War around 1909 onwards, so there were restrictions on the availability of metals and other materials. So wood was a local material. And some of the other challenges they had was that it was in the middle of Tasmania, in a cold, high, wet, windy place in the middle of Tasmania with no roads to it. So they had to produce these things by getting stuff in there, drawn by hand or by horse and cart, or they used what they had locally.
How confident were the engineers of the time that their engineering calculations were good? I mean, we're talking about holding back enormous volumes of water with concrete and steel.
Yeah. So a couple of things, and for me this is really, I'm not an expert on these things. I've looked into it, and we have some heritage engineers in Engineers Australia, which is the body of engineers in Australia, and that's where I'm getting my information from. But some of the background was that the idea for the hydro plant in Central Australia was actually developed by a professor of maths and physics at the University of Tasmania. So this is a guy that's an expert on water flows, and he had a holiday house in Shannon up in the Central Highlands, and he would go up on holidays in summer and hang out and study maths and think intelligent thoughts. And he came up with this theoretical idea of producing hydroelectric power in Central Tasmania. Mm-hmm. And he wrote an article to the Mercury in 1905.
And said, we should do this.
And then an engineer, he read that article and he got in touch with this professor, and they started talking about, well, what's possible. So an idea was possible. An engineer thought about, okay, how would we do it? But for it to happen, they needed a business case, I suppose, a reason, a consumer. And that was where, at the same time, developments with the production of zinc on the West Coast mines of Tassie and some other zinc mines, there was a challenge with converting that zinc into raw material, or sorry, into zinc product. And at the same time, someone had come up with a patent for a new system that could produce it, but it required a lot of electricity. So you had a mathematician and an engineer thinking, here's an idea, and the engineer thinks it can be done. And as to how precise, you know, it's some of the first power systems in the world had only been built in the last 20 years, so it was a new field. The idea of the civil engineering, which is digging canals and trenches, that was still quite new in terms of that application, but the idea of a power station, that was also very new.
Let's go back to some of the amazing bits in terms of scale. Mm. When you're standing on a dam wall particularly, I mean the commitment of concrete and reinforced steel to hold back a volume of water that starts off, of course, as a river, but what you want to become as an enormous dam. I mean, the physics of that is just staggering.
Yes, particularly if you go to somewhere like the Gordon Dam and stand on the Gordon Dam at Lake Petter, which is a very impressive piece of engineering. But interestingly, the first dam for the Wattamana Power Station was actually a very humble dam, quite a simple block and stone construction, I think. So because Great Lake was a large body of water anyway, they didn't need a large dam because it was a natural depression. But over time, as the system was successful and they were able to export power to Hobart, I think the development of a carbide factory at Snug, which actually caused Snug as a township to evolve, that as a customer meant they needed an expansion of the dam at the Great Lake. And that's when a second dam, known as the Miena 2 dam, was built. And that was a larger dam. That was 100 and something metres long. And it had 27 beautiful concrete arches. So it's called an arched buttress dam made out of concrete. But the challenge they had was it wasn't, as you said, it could be a very massive concrete block of stuff to stop the water. But you'd have to get that concrete to the dam in the middle of Tasmania with very poor road infrastructure. So the engineers designed a dam that was very efficient in its use of materials. So, and you can actually go and see the dam still there. It's 27 beautiful arches arching up into the bottom of Great Lake. But there's actually a third dam behind that submerges that dam sometimes. But
wow. Yeah, so. Let's talk then about the transmission of power, copper sort of arteries stretching out across the state to deliver power to different places. I mean, how revolutionary was that in terms of the change that it brought to Tasmania?
So we were not able to transmit power very far because of a couple of things. One, as we look up now in our streets and we see the power lines are sitting on insulators on timber poles. And we have different voltages of power lines. So we now see stretching across Tasmania these very high steel towers with large insulators and high voltage power lines. But our ability to produce those insulators didn't start to evolve until 1907, 1910, I think. So we weren't able to transmit high voltage power until we started building the Watermunna Dam, or just before. And that's important because the higher the voltage, the more efficient your transmission. So we want our efficiency to be high, otherwise you lose too much of the power in trying to transmit. So it's like a small extension cord. You can't send stuff very far. You need a big, efficient one.
Mm.
So we were very cutting edge in terms of global developments of transmission technology as well as generating electricity from hydropower.
David Poynings, our guest this morning from Engineers Australia. We're talking about these issues all of this week. David, do you think when we'd come to compile the final 10, well, you'd have to imagine somewhere near the top of the list will be on our list of the 10 engineering wonders, the hydro schemes in Tasmania. Do you think it'll be the Watermunna Dam? Is that going to come in as on the list?
I think so, yes, because it's cutting edge in terms of what was happening in the world at the time. It's some impressive engineering in terms of the challenges they faced. There were global shortages of materials because of World War One. It's a very challenging place in which to do these things in the middle of Tassie, and that it lasted 50 years successfully providing power.
Well, there we are. That's going to be up on the list somewhere, but we need your help to put the rest of the list together. You can jump up online, abc.net.au/NorthTas or abc.net.au/Hobart. Wow, Batman Bridge, another nomination. The Sathana Dam, I hope I got that right, 360 feet high, cheapest rock-filled dam in the Southern Hemisphere, says someone via text. You can still see sections of the timber penstocks made from King Billy or Douglas fir, I think. Have a look up near Laughing Jack, says somebody else this morning via text. David, we got to run because we've got things to do, but it's lovely to chat to you this morning. We will do this again next week and have a look at the great inventions in Tasmania.